Welcome to All Africa's Silencing of the Gun series, where we focus on peace building on the continent. I am Manzari Tepeka from All Africa, and today our focus is Ethiopia. So, Fesseha Tekle, researcher for Amnesty International, and Zelalem Tafera, senior legal officer of the African Court on Human and People's Rights, are with us today. So, I'd like to welcome you both and thank you for taking the time to be here with us. So, as we sit here, Ethiopia is in the midst of a humanitarian crisis as the delivery of much needed aid to the Tigray region remains extremely challenging after months of conflict threatening food security, water, and shelter. Ethiopia's federal government has been at war with the main Tigrayan political group, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, since November 2020, and there hasn't been much peace since. So, Zelalem, just to set the scene, what would you say is driving the war between the Liberation Front and the Ethiopian government forces?
Thank you for having me. Good morning to everyone. The main reasons, I would say, for this conflict are two. One, ideological. Second, unrectified past impunity. When I say ideological, there are groups which want to see a country where there is a kind of autonomous administration, strong regional government, like a sort of confederation. And there are groups which wanted to see a more strong government, a central government. And there is a disagreement on that point, ideologically. One focusing more on ethnic identity, another focusing more on national Ethiopian identity. And the second one is past impunity. As we know, the regional government of Tigray was in power for 27 years, driving the seat of the federal government. And many people claim that, and it was a fact, it was reported by many international human rights organizations, that there were atrocities, there were oppressive actors and practices, and massive corruption. So there are grievances. There is that impunity which has never been put to accountability. And if we see the entire context, it could be assessed from these two ideological and past historical grievances. Of course, some of the grievances could go back to centuries. Some people, like some people in the Tigrayan Liberation Front, trace the origin of their grievances back to maybe 100 years. But I think the immediate causes are recent ideological differences, as well as some recent grievances, which come from the 27 years of rule of the Grand Liberation Front.
You are listening to the All Africa Silencing of the Guns podcast series on peace building on the continent. And we are in conversation with Amnesty International's Fesseha Tekle and Senior Legal Officer of the African Court of Human and People's Rights, Zelalem Tafera, on the conflict in Ethiopia. Fesseha, let me come to you now. Do you believe the recent elections won by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and the ceasefire that followed, which of course the TPLF have labeled as a joke, will do much to help restore peace in the region?
I mean, one of the trigger points for the Tigray, for the Tigray conflict, was also the disagreement over the conduct of the general elections, which was supposed to happen last year, but which didn't take place, allegedly for a number of reasons, including the COVID pandemic and other reasons. Well, the election was conducted, and despite all the expectations that the election would be highly contested, that didn't happen. We have not seen major security issues around the election. The election was able to be conducted in many of the places, except in Tigray and other conflict and tension areas in parts of Oromia some parts of Amhara and the whole of Somali region. I think there is a plan to conduct the election in those parts in September, the first week of September, and the NEB, the National Election Board, is preparing itself to hold those elections in those places. And the ruling party has won the election, but we have to know the context in which the election was conducted. Well, there is, the major issue is the Tigray conflict, but in general, there were a number of grievances and political tensions in different parts of the country. For instance, there is the Oromo Liberation Army, which is operating in Oromia, especially western and southern parts of Oromia. And also there are tensions in parts of the southern region about autonomy, issues that are not yet resolved around ethnic identity, border issues, and many other things. So this has affected the election because in some of the places the election did not take place because of all this uncertainties and insecurity. The same thing in Somalia, the Somali region, the election was not able to take place because of some grievances, especially the grievance on border issues with the Afar region. So even if the election was completed successfully without major events in terms of security or unrest, that doesn't mean that it has dealt with these underlying problems which are still outstanding. So what we can see is that, it's good the election was at least peacefully concluded, but that should be an encouragement for the government to deal with these underlying unaddressed problems which are affecting the situation in the country. The political situation is not still good in Ethiopia. There are tensions in different parts of the country. There are vertical and horizontal violence in many parts of the country. So the government needs to sit down. The next agenda should be about ensuring security and stopping human rights violations by any actors in different parts of the country. It can be horizontal violence, that means communal violence between different communities or armed groups, or violations by the government security forces, but they need to be stopped. There needs to be proper investigation. And as our experts from the African Commission has said, the injustice that has piled up for centuries in Ethiopia, potentially for centuries, but from what I know, for decades in Ethiopia needs to be dealt with. There are grievances that have been there and that have been simmering, and none of the governments that came to power in the last 50 years, they didn't properly deal with them. So if we are committed to make the future of the country peaceful, we need to deal with them head on, without pushing them under the rug. That was what they were doing for the last 5-6 decades. So that should stop, and we need to deal with them honestly and transparently.
Here's a question for the both of you. Zlalem, you can start. What challenges have you experienced as peace builders while doing your work in the region, especially since sometimes there's a lack of information coming out of Ethiopia?
The main challenges to peace building in Ethiopia is the ethnic polarization. Like the moment people know from where you come, then they already form opinions towards you and what you are going to say. So the ethnic polarization is a big obstacle. In Ethiopia, perception is not just perception. Perception itself is a fact. Perception is taken as the truth. So if I know that Tekle belongs to a particular ethnic group, it's just immediately I would expect a certain point of views from him. And I would foreclose the opportunity for any dialogue. So that is a big obstacle that we are facing. The second one is lack of sympathy. We all have grievances. We all have pains to be heard. But
since all of us have pains, we always talk about our own pains without showing any sort of sympathy towards the pains of others. Lack of sympathy will result in an automatical dismissal of the other side, like not to give an opportunity for a discussion platform, because I am also, I have my own pain, so you ignore the pains of others. So the fact that people haven't been trained to consider what would I act if I were in someone's or in the enemy's foot, that is putting more and more challenges to discussion, dialogue, and reconciliation. We have to see this from a historical point of view. In Ethiopia, we have a very complex history, even to the extent that one doesn't feel belongingness to the national identity, another strongly feeling attached to the Ethiopian identity. There is a history of oppression. There is a history of marginalization. Some of these had ethnic elements, religious elements. So the fact that the history itself is very complex and we haven't reconciled ourselves to the past is a big challenge to make any stride in building peace in the country.
Faseha, your point of view on your challenges?
As Lalaba said, ethnic polarization is the biggest hurdle, and that's why we need to have a conversation in Ethiopia, because we have reached at a point where people are not talking to each other as a person, but as ethnic identity. So people see the ethnic identity and the communication is defined by that. And just to add to that, what we can also say is that the weaponization of human rights is also a big, big, big problem. It's related to this, but it's not only from the ethnic point of view, ethnic group point of view, but also from government institutions. You can see that the government is jumping on any opportunity to accuse others of human rights violations, but rejecting allegations of human rights violations by government organs or by government entities. So human rights is so weaponized that it lost its merit. I mean, human rights is supposed to bring together all, because it's about humanity. It's not about political views. It's not about ethnicity of the person or the victim or the perpetrator. It's about humanity. But that humanity is now being exploited to the extent that, like, they are weaponizing to blame the other and to reject one's own failure in terms of human rights. That's one thing. But also in terms of communication, facility is also a problem. Like the government, especially, is using phones, telecommunication facilities as a riot control tools. That has happened in Oromia. Last year, there was a riot and uprising and unrest in Oromia following the killing of artist Acaalu Hundeessa. And immediately, they closed internet and phone communication. The same thing in other places where there was unrest or riot, that was happening. And it has history. Actually, now the history of Japan shutting down internet communication goes back to 2015, 2014. Whenever there is a resistance to the government, they switch off the social media platforms, they block access to internet, they block Facebook or things like that. So that is making our work very difficult, and verifying allegations of human rights violations, unrest is becoming very challenging. And that's the same thing which has happened also in Tigray. on 4th of November, there was just the conflict broke, and the first victim is the internet and phone communication. And it has remained so spontaneous, and it was very difficult for us to investigate the human rights situation there. And without investigating them, you cannot think of peace, because people have grievances. Their truth has to come out. They cannot talk about negotiate without addressing those serious issues. Sexual and gender-based violence mass has happened in Tigray. And while we are trying to cover it up, how can people really reconcile without telling the truth? So in addition to all these distrusts which has piled up among different communities, we can say that the government use of media and the telecom facilities is not very helpful for reconciliation and peace.
So you are listening to the All Africa Silencing of the Guns podcast series on peace building on the continent. And we are in conversation with Amnesty International's Fesseha Tekle and Senior Legal Officer of the African Court on Human and People's Rights, Zelalem Tafera, on the conflict in Ethiopia. So let's move on to the matter of justice, accountability and truth as a pillar for peace building in Ethiopia. Fesseha, again to you, can you talk us through your thoughts on this?
Thank you. I mean, this is a very important issue. I mean, if we want to really address the growing unrest and conflict in Ethiopia, I think it is time to look back on our history openly, because there are so many grievances. And as Zelalem has said already, they might date back to centuries, or at least one century, if not more. So those grievances need to be addressed. And shutting them out is not going to help. I mean, we had a number of opportunities in Ethiopia to address those problems. After the toppling of the emperor in the 1970s, there was an opportunity, but we didn't use that opportunity. Rather, the government, the Derg government, the military government that took power, has added a pile of other human rights violations, like the Red Terror and the war crimes they have committed. And also, after 17 years of the rule by the Derg, the EPRDF came to power in 1991. But they didn't use that opportunity to arrest the root cause of violence and grievance in Ethiopia. Instead, what they have unrolled was victor's justice. They just prosecuted some of the high officials of the Derg, even if the grievances are more deeper than that. And the same thing, and then they stayed in power for close to 27 years, and now the prime minister and his government has come to power through popular unrest that stayed for more than 3 years. But what came out of that process is unsatisfactory. There was no roadmap, there was no any strategy to address these underlying problems of Ethiopia. The government has established some institutions which are very weak, and they were established without proper consultation and participation of the people, and they have not delivered anything in terms of reconciliation, truth and accountability. For me, what is driving all this violence, conflict in Ethiopia is the rampant impunity, which has been there for years. And when there is impunity, widespread impunity, people lose hope and lose confidence in the government. So they take justice to their hands. And that's what's happening. So like for the last 30 years, border issues or ethnic identity issues were being raised. The existing mechanisms were not used to solve them. For instance, like the problem of Walkites or Raya, the problem of Oromo and Amhara regions, like those people who are claiming that this one belongs to here or it should belong to Amhara. They were there for the last 30 years. But the government has opted to put brush them off instead of raising them in a very transparent way. So now they are exploding, and that means they are taking lives. People are losing lives because of that, because we have not addressed our past. The issue of language, the issue of equality, all these were there, but they were not addressed. So we need to ensure proper accountability. We need to come to terms with our past. We need to address those and in a manner that can bring all Ethiopians feel that they are Ethiopians, because some Ethiopians or some parts of the country, they feel that they are not equal citizens of Ethiopia, because what happened to them have never been acknowledged in a proper way. So truth, accountability, and reconciliation are the way forward for Ethiopia.
Right, so Zelalem, to continue with the theme of justice, to what degree have media and people's rights been infringed upon? I mean, I saw a recent report that more journalists were detained in the Afar region. So just your confirmation on that, and to just follow on with that question. Zelalem?
Yeah. So let me go back to what my brother was speaking on in relation to this communication issues. The government has been putting restrictions on internet and communication facilities. I agree that we need communication facilities because, as I say, one of the main challenges in Ethiopia is the lack of platform for people to discuss, to have dialogue. So to have communication facilities is very, very important. At the same time, we should also see the role of media in building peace in the country. Honestly, if you ask me, social media has been destructive in the Ethiopian in the Ethiopian political landscape. Like, hate speech is openly spread. Fake news are openly spread. And how can you build a nation? How can you create trust? Because trust is actually the most important ingredient that we have missed in our communications. How do you build that trust if fake news are the rules rather than the exception? So, for example, last year, I think it was in July when Haçalı was assassinated. Still, we don't know. I think last month, the accused was convicted of murder. But at that time, I recall that social media was used to preach hate speech, a call for genocide. And the government was forced to shut down. And honestly, that was an inappropriate measure that it took. I supported that, not because I want internet to be shut down, but nothing is bigger than the well-being of the society. Nothing is bigger than the existence of the state. So I think we should see it in light of the prevailing context in Ethiopia. It has been a very serious challenge, really. It's fracturing all, like, century-old ties, social fabrics. Social media is playing a very, very negative role. So we should see it. But then we have to come to the issue of accountability. We need to have accountability. We need to have truth and reconciliation. That has been missing. And for that, the government has a role to play. Individual citizens have a role to play. Civil societies have a role to play. Everyone has a role to play. And of course, the international community also has a role to play. But what we have seen is that the international community is not well informed. And people feel, see, for example, the recent position of the United States, it's creating anti-US sentiment in Ethiopia, at least in some parts of the country, because some people are saying our pains are not being heard. You are just having a one-sided story. And that is true. Whether what people are saying is true or not, that is something else. But people's grievances have to be heard. And any policy a foreign state or an international community takes, or any position it adopts, should take into account the different voices in the country. So I think we need to play our part, each of us, citizens, our government, opposition figures, and we have to, especially Ethiopians, we have to realize that at least we have to learn from our recent past that no ethnic group, no religious group will prosper while its neighbor is starving, while its neighbor is impoverished. We need to create that awareness and use the media to create that our future are intertwined. Our destinies are intertwined. We'll swim or sing together. And we have to use the media to create this awareness.
True, very true. Earlier this month, the EU's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, urged member states to consider imposing sanctions over the crisis in Tigray. Faseha, is this helpful for the mission of peace building in the region?
I think both the Europeans and US, they know what their standards, because they also have responsibility in terms of if they're providing aid or financial support for any party who is involved in human rights violations, they might be implicated in that. Whether it is going to affect the peace or things like that, that might be an issue. But I would like to look at it from human rights perspective, because if the state's funds are going to be used in the conflict, that's something they have to be concerned about. But whether that will kind of harden the government position or its constituency, that's a political judgment to make, not as a human rights organization. But one thing which I would also need to stress is that access to internet and communication is a human right, and any restriction on human rights, like rights, especially right to, when we come to freedom of expression, Africa, access to information, it needs to follow the rules. Like, there are rules for that, whether it is necessary, and due process according to the law, all those things. So any arbitrary closure of internet may not be necessarily in line with the human rights standards. So there might be some misuse of, like we have seen that in Ethiopia. So it has to be proportionate, it has to be according to a law. I mean, in Ethiopia, there is no law that governs how the government will address the issue of internet closure, access, and things like that. So that means the arbitrary closure is not acceptable by any means. So it's about the legal standards, because that should be underlined.
Egypt's call to the UN Security Council to push for Ethiopia to enter into a binding agreement over the filling and operation of Ethiopia's dam on the Blue Nile. To what extent is this particular issue hampering peace-building efforts?
I mean, unfortunately, the conflict in Tigray is happening simultaneously with other geographic concerns, including the border dispute with Sudan on Al-Fashak. The geography, the Eastern Africa and the Horn of Africa, it is full of tensions, and some of these are going to play into the resolution of the conflict, into the peace, and all these things. I know, these are going to complicate. This might complicate. We cannot speculate how the GERD issue is going to be resolved. But anyone involved in this should not relate to the Ethiopian human rights situation, and they need to settle it according to the processes they have already established. I think the Security Council has referred it back to the African Mekong platform to handle the situation. And I think that's the right decision, but that's not something which comes to me as Amnesty International.
Zelalem, would you like to add your thoughts to that?
Yes. Let me speak on, I think, the previous issue on EU sanctions, and I'll come back to the Egypt and Ethiopia disagreements on this GERD issue, the Renaissance Dam, as we call it. Regarding EU sanctions, it's my personal opinion. And by the way, I wanted to make a disclaimer. I am here on my behalf, not on my organization's behalf. So it's my personal opinion. And it doesn't necessarily reflect the opinion of my organization. So regarding EU sanctions, I think they are misinformed, if you ask me honestly, because sanctions generally, I don't favor sanctions for the reason that sanctions at the end of the day cause harm to ordinary citizens, ordinary people, not people in power. We have seen it in Iran. We have seen it everywhere where it was imposed. So I don't think the EU and the Americans are following a right path, taking a constructive role in resolving the conflict in Ethiopia by putting sanctions, because these sanctions are targeting the government, and the government will be pressurized in many ways, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it will facilitate the peace building process. And we know that now the context is very bad for all developing countries, for the entire world, because of Corona. Governments are very stretched, economic resources are scarce, and you, in addition to that, you put sanctions, and I don't think that they will have any positive effect in encouraging peace. At least that is my personal view. So they need to reconsider, and maybe, I don't know, they might not want to give the money but directly to the government, but maybe use other mechanisms to make sure that citizens on the ground are supported instead of suspending any aid that they were granting to the nation. And this is the sanction issue, at least by many Ethiopians. It is now being perceived as not something attached to the human rights situation in Tigray or elsewhere, but it's relating to the GERD negotiation, the dam negotiation. Many Ethiopians are saying that actually the Europeans and the Americans are not concerned, truly concerned about human rights. They are concerned about the dam rather. And yes, when you see it, maybe it has some truth, because the previous administration of Trump, it had clearly a biased position against Ethiopia. We recall that Trump, he said that the Egyptians could even bomb the dam, and it was openly, it's just it's out there for anyone to see. So many Ethiopians have felt that the US is betraying them, because Ethiopia and the US have been strong allies for I think over a century. And that relationship is just being sidelined for the purpose of putting pressure on Ethiopia to sign a binding agreement with respect to the dam. So from many Ethiopians' point of view, to now, all sanctions, even despite the fact that there is a serious humanitarian crisis, not only in Tigray and everywhere in Ethiopia. And by the way, I would like to note that the humanitarian crisis is not limited to Tigray. Of course, Tigray has been the major spotlight, the major epicenter of the humanitarian crisis. But you see it, you go to Amhara region, there are hundreds of thousands who have been dislocated from their homes. You go to Afar, even recently, over the last two last week or 2 weeks,
thousands have been displaced as a result of the conflict. So there is a humanitarian crisis everywhere, and not to mention the crisis in the south because of intercommunal fightings. So despite the fact that there are this humanitarian crisis in almost every part of the country, people feel that the current policy of the US and the European Union is more focused not on the humanitarian crisis, but on the dam issue. Because almost in every press release addressing Ethiopia, they have touched upon the issue of the dam. The message that the people get is that these people are not really concerned about the humanitarian situation, and their policies are misguided, and their main focus, main target is the dam. So that is how the people are currently perceiving the dam situation. But if you ask me how the dam issue should be resolved, because we are Africans, and I believe that Egyptians are also Africans, we have the African Union. We have our common organization. We have this our common platform. And just running to the European Union or to the US in order to resolve an African problem is an insult to our dignity as people, African people, and the African Union. The African Union has its own platform. It has been trying to resolve the conflict. We need to have good faith from all of our sides. Ethiopia, as an Ethiopian, I don't want to see any Egyptian to starve while Ethiopians, you know, enjoying electricity or anything. And Egyptians also should understand that Ethiopians should not continue to live in poverty while they are having like 100% electricity. So we need to Africanize the conflict and the solution. The more we internationalize it, the more we put the dam issue as a security issue, it will just complicate. It will be intergenerational conflict, and we should avoid that.
Well, you do make a very good point on that, Zilalem. So we are reaching the end of our time. And before we go, I'd like to ask you both a final question. What needs to be done to resolve the prevailing crisis? We can start with Zilalem.
You were breaking. I couldn't hear what you said.
Oh, no. So I was saying that before we go, I just wanted to find out from yourself, what needs to be done to resolve the prevailing crisis and to build sustainable peace in Ethiopia?
Well, as I said, we should understand, first of all, to understand any crisis, we need to understand it. You know, we need to understand what it is. We need to understand its complexities. So we need to know the underlying causes. And second, we need to create a platform for dialogue. What we are missing in Ethiopia is dialogue, open dialogue. Sometimes we need to have blunt discussions if necessary, you know? Like if you fight, if you are brothers and there is no way that you can separate. If I don't know, Tigray wants to separate or to get independence, it cannot go to another planet. It will remain a close neighbor. Or if one group wants to form its own independent country, it is still there. It will remain, at least geographically, very close to the other. So since our destinies are very intertwined, we need to have dialogue to find our modus vivendi, you know, or how to coexist, how to live together despite our differences. So we need to have that dialogue platform. And the international community is, as I said, it's somehow fueling the conflict. So we need to have partners, international partners, to create trust. As I said previously, the main problem in Ethiopia is trust, lack of trust. So maybe international actors would assist Ethiopians to create trust, to promote trust instead of like biased policies or misinformed, one-sided, misguided policies. So I think that if we have international actors which are impartial, which focus more on bringing the different actors together to discuss, we'll have a positive outcome. And we finally, I think we need to have institutions. That is what we are missing in Ethiopia. Even if the government sometimes wants to enforce certain policies, the institution is not there. We haven't built them. So we need to have the courage to build good institutions. Currently, we have the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, which is doing very, very well compared to the previous Human Rights Commission. The courts are doing well, in my personal assessment. The election board was also good. So we see some positive developments in building institutions, but this is not true for every organ of the government or every institution. So we need assistance in that regard. The nation needs assistance from international actors. So if we combine all of them, I think we can build peace. Thank you.
Fuseha, your thoughts on sustainable peace?
Thank you. I mean, one thing we need to also emphasize is that we might have disagreements, but there should be willingness to resolve them instead of going after people who disagree with us or labeling others just because they disagree. And that also relates to people who tell us the truth or their version of the truth, even if that truth is not comfortable for us or even annoying for us. That is that's missing in Ethiopia, not only among individuals, but also as an institution. So the government is not happy when human rights organizations tell it that you have done this and rectified. Instead of focusing on the recommendations, they focus on these allegations, like this is a Western organization, the neoliberals, the EPRDF used to say that neoliberals or whatever for Amnesty and Human Rights Watch. Now government is saying that, this person is from Tigray, this organization was supported by TPLF or things like that. So instead of engaging with the message, we always focus on the messenger. That's not the right approach. So listening to the person, the views, instead of personalizing the views, that's very important. And there is also this paranoia that the international community is against Ethiopia. That's not the case. Ethiopia is more than 100 million people. And the mess is going to be a problem for the international community if Ethiopia fails. They don't want that. They don't want to deal with that. Any failed state is a problem for the whole world, for the globe. And you know what happened in Yemen, in Somalia, they have learned, they have taken a lesson. We might not agree with their approach, but I don't think that they want Ethiopia to disintegrate. That's not to their advantage, because these 100 million people, they are going to be a burden for the whole of the world. And we have seen that, like those countries that have disintegrated, like 30 million or 20 million, what kind of problems they have created in terms of security, finance, all those things, including environment. We need to get away with that, and we need to engage with people in good faith. And just one thing, like the African Commission, they have established a commission of inquiry to follow on the situation in Tigray. But the government has rejected that commission of inquiry. So there is no willingness to even engage with these mechanisms. So all entities who are involved in this process they just weaponize. If the commission comes up with anything that can blame the armed group which is fighting in Tigray, they will be happy to accept that. But since the commission is going to be impartial and hopefully, and it's going to bring out human rights violations by both parties, that kind of collaboration is not extended to the Commission of Inquiry. It's an African mechanism. It was established according to the rules and procedures of the African human rights, human and people's rights. But the government is not willing even to listen to that. So all that kind of readiness have to be there. We need to appreciate that the African Commission is investing in that. If we need peace and prosperity to come to the country. So that's it, and we have to be open for dialogue. We need to be brave to look at our past and engage with it honestly, instead of blaming people for this or for that, individuals, entities, or anyone. Thank you.
No, thank you so much, Paseya. You do make a very valuable point of political will playing a big role in trying to bring about peace in Ethiopia. So you've been listening to the All Africa Silencing of the Gun series on peace building on the continent. And we were in conversation with Amnesty International's Paseya Tekle and Senior Legal Officer of the African Court on Human and People's Rights, Zilalem Tefera, on the conflict in Ethiopia. I'd like to thank you both. Thank you to our experts for taking the time to elaborate on issues in Ethiopia and what is being done through peace building. All Africa is grateful to the Carnegie Corporation of New York for supporting all our reporting on peace building in Africa.